Okay.
This meeting is now being recorded.
So, this is the FESTAB meeting, and the specific subgroup is the JSON Task Force. And on the call, Alex Jackal, Susan, May, John, Jeff, Jen, Steve, and Michael Morris. So I'm about to forward a message to Jen so she can get on the... Okay, Jen, you should have the invitation. And there's a button down at the bottom to join.
Great, thanks. So I'll figure it out.
Okay, so from the discussion last week, Alex, you weren't with us, and we had some guests on from Oracle, Carrie Brown and Phil Nichols, and I don't see they're here today. Either one of you guys here? And Phil gave us some insight into what was going on at Oracle and other places in terms of JSON-LD. And his, I think his take was that one of the things that was missing is that it probably has a lot of backing, but the tools aren't there to support a lot of the things that people want to do with JSON. So that was his take. If you took a look at the minutes, I think I summarized that. And Phil hasn't come back to contradict me, so I assume that's correct. PeopleSoft is not doing anything with it. IMS Global is using JSON-LD, but is removing it from LTI because of tool support. And his recommendation was basically we keep doing what we're doing in terms of making JSON and XML design rules that make them compatible and translation rules, and just keep an eye on the JSON-LD until it has support for the appropriate features. So, Alex, since you weren't here last week, probably you would like to comment on that.
No, I haven't had time to process it, Michael, to tell you the truth, so I'm a little behind. So I don't have any comment on it right now, but I'll go through that as we're having the meeting. I apologize.
Okay, that'd be good.
So, Michael, John Lovell, and I missed that meeting.
Hi, John.
I'm sorry. I tried to get on it.
Yeah, I don't know what happened there. We're trying to figure that out, but yeah, the backup plan is always just to dial in if you can't get on the WebEx.
Yeah, and that's what I did today. Obviously, something's changed on my end. So is there any sense for the role JSON-LD really plays? I mean, from my point of view, especially playing with the JSON-LD playground and doing as much research as I could, you know, there's all this JSON-LD stuff, but then it can, you know, basically, you know, get hidden away, if you will. If you, like, bring up the recipe and go to the compacted view on the bottom, you have the, you know, an external JSON file, which is a lot like having, you know, an XML schema that defines stuff, and you've got kind of this preamble that goes in the context, and then you can have, you know, regular JSON down below, and it's still right. A JSON-LD thing versus, you know, what it means to actually have linked data with JSON-LD doesn't seem to be, you know, the same kind of thing. And I wonder, you know, if we've got a, you know, and on top of all this, you know, I'm looking at open APIs really hard, and they use the JSON schemas to describe their JSON payloads. And I'm kind of wondering if people have a sense yet for kind of where JSON falls. Is it a schema? Is it a linking scheme? Is it both? You know, am I wrong to think of it as having schema features? You know, from my point of view, it seems like it's a great big toolbox of tools and not really, you know, one narrow set of technology, which is probably why, you know, tool support is tough. You know, something says, I support JSON-LD, and, well, I do the linked data part, and some other piece is doing the schema part. It's kind of the sense I'm getting, but others on the call, if they know better than me, I'd love to hear from them.
Yeah, and I think that's the struggle we've been having, John, is just finding people who are experts in this area. And so we're still working on that to get somebody in that really is steeped in it. So that's been our goal. And I don't think anybody can answer the questions you just asked. And I agree with you. The nice thing about JSON-LD is you can create an attribute name, a property name, and it can be mapped in a different file to some URL. And as far as that pure JSON is concerned, you don't even know the difference, right? It's off in some other file. So you can hide some of this stuff, too, so that you can add it later, right? So that...
Right, right. I mean, yeah, the good news is you can always add it later. My concern is there's, like, all these kind of, like, schema-y features that you can just kind of plug in later and reference the file and some other things. But there, you know, there's lots of interesting things going on with JSON-LD that have me, you know, my head kind of spinning. One of those is it seems like a really popular thing to do in JSON-LD to refer to the XML schema, you know, for like data types. Like one of the things on our checklist of things to work through, right, was what do we do about dates? What do we do about timestamps, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And interestingly, you know, JSON-LD's approach seems to be to define which version of XSD it's using and use the XSD types for those things. But that's only, you know, I spent maybe 4 hours playing with it since we met two meetings ago, so 2 weeks ago. And so, you know, I feel like I know just enough to be dangerous at this point. But it seems like this real interesting mix of linking data, scheming features, leveraging XML schema, being able to hide it. Maybe you don't want to hide it. I'm wondering if when we talk to somebody who goes, oh yeah, we're using JSON-LD, we go, which parts, right? How are you using it? Are you using it to link data? If so, what does that look like? Are you using it to define a JSON schema? What does that look like? Are you using it to import XML schema types? What does that look like? Because, you know, I find references to all this stuff and all these things people are doing. And then, you know, and it's like, well, what tools should I use to do all this? And, you know, it's right now it's crickets. But there's different tools for different bits and pieces, and I think they've got one thing that's called JSON-LD that's doing a lot of stuff. And so I think that might be the critical question as we bump into people that go, oh, we're using JSON-LD, you should use it too. We should say, what parts? How are you using it? What tools are you using to support that? Because, yeah, it's a lot of stuff. And part of me, right, is because I'm concerned about the linking piece, maybe more so than you are, is, you know, you can hide away a lot of the JSON-LD and have it load up from this external file, right? But my concern is the actual linking pieces, that seems to be more standardized and exposed in the data than just what you hide away, right? If you want to get across the URL, you don't try to hide the URL that you're trying to get across. If you're typing to, you know, a definition that's over someplace else, well, then you might hide it away, even if it involves a URL. So those are my comments. And I understand where the Oracle guys are coming from. That's kind of the same conclusion I came to, is, you know, this really isn't right, but I'm having a hard time putting my arms around what this is. And it could be that, you know, we're just missing how people are using JSON-LD in the marketplace.
Yeah, I think, and it might be interesting to look at what they've tried to do with, and I didn't even realize the LTI standard was being revised with JSON-LD, but, I mean, we might want to look at that and see what they were trying to do with that, and then why that caused a complication, why they're trying to back out on it too. So, but yeah, the applications. What are the applications? I mean, we know one of the applications for us is, and especially for your schemas, because you have many more schemas than we do, is just the namespacing, right? Just being able to reference using a mechanism that's very similar to XML namespaces, to, you know, using that base URL and then adding the additional information using a colon. And so, yeah, all that stuff, it could be valuable and could be useful. And you're, with you guys, the linking is really important. And we just discovered one of our standards, which is our ePortfolio standard, has a lot of linking, internal linking within the file itself. So, and it uses an XPath statement to reference that other piece of information. So that's a, how do we, you know, that's one we're going to have to talk about. How could we translate that into JSON? I mean, are we really going to put XPath expressions in JSON? Well, the JSON path, or whatever they call it, is similar to that, right? It's just,
if we come up with clean JSON, right, replacing slashes with dots is a hard algorithm. But if we, you know, but you got to get to clean JSON first. You got to get to you know, really vanilla, you know, XML and JSON where it doesn't have attributes and need the, what is it, they call it in JSON, the array operator, I think, where you put in the brackets to get it a name that has a special character and all that kind of crud. You've got to be very careful. And then when you get to that point, then, yeah, that would be trivial.
Yep. So, well, what I was planning on doing today was to continue with our discussion of the various features within XML and then saying how we handle that. And the first one I have on the agenda is, John, was based on a comment that you made. Basically, it wasn't in my original list, was how do we deal, we went through this no attribute concept, right? And then,
yep.
But the XML linking, you have to have attributes to do that. So I can't think of any way that A4L could get away with not having attributes.
You mean like for our ref IDs?
Yeah, for the ref ID, yeah.
Well, I mean, so this is a great point because, yeah, this is one of those things that keeps me up at night. I mean, my thought is, you know, we could have a ref ID field be like the first element of, you know, the first child element rather than being an attribute on the tag. That's not as clean in an XML world. The other possibility is, you know, when we get to talking about translation, you know, that's special enough, right? If we want to say, hey, you know, the primary keys in XML should really be conveyed here this way, that then if we said, well, in JSON, they're usually conveyed here, you know, that would be specific enough that we could potentially say, oh, you know, that needs to, you know, that's a special case, right? It needs to be handled differently. But I would like to explore the idea of where does JSON usually put those things? And how much of a sin would it be in the XML world to put it someplace similar rather than require the ref ID? You know, but also along those thoughts, you know, when we get to namespace declarations, well, that'll be another conversation, right? Because
right.
Those are
attributes. Second one on the list, yeah.
those are attributes, right? So,
yeah,
let's keep that one second on the list because these two are going to kind of flow into each other. You know, where do primary keys in JSON objects usually go, or is that not even something people generally think about?
Yeah, what kind of linking is done within, even within a file? Because you might have multiple schemas, but you're going to have a single instance document, right? And you're referencing things within that instance document.
Do you do that a lot? Because we don't, right?
We don't.
We pretty much up with boring flat XML which is going to help us here.
The one case is our ePortfolio, where they reference, they use the XPath expression to refer to specific paths in that instance document. So that's
but are
the
you
first
mixing
one we've done like that.
Are you mixing namespaces in there, or is there just the one?
No,
namespace?
Because there are some. Let me pull up a. That's a good question. Let me pull up an instance example from that. Let me see if I can find one real quick. Let's look at the submission. I hope this is it. Here's ePortfolio, okay. Nope. One namespace at the top level.
Yeah.
That's it.
So, I mean, most JSON, right, figures out how it's going to convey a version. But I think we can convey, I mean, we're conveying versions with our namespaces. It's not something we did in SIP 2. As I work with it, I think it's something that might be, rediscussable before we get all the way to clean JSON as we're discussing it here. Are we gonna look at the namespaces right now, or are we gonna try to focus on the ID?
We can go on that. Yeah, we can start on that. I was just gonna look at this ePortfolio thing to see exactly. So just give you an example. They've got an element called event object link, and it's got an object path, which is an XPath expression, academic ePortfolio, competencies, competency ID equals competency 1. So it's using that particular XPath expression to reference something in this document. Competency 1 in this document, which is interesting. Yeah. This is an example, so they probably would have given it a name besides competency 1. So that's an interesting approach, and I don't think you guys, you're actually using IDs and ID refs, right?
With lots of objects. I mean, that's generally how we do it. So we've got relationships amongst different chunks of data that have different owners. But we do use XPaths in a couple of different interesting ways, including we're working heavily to add them for, security, for kind of ACL level stuff at the element level, attribute level, that kind of stuff. And, that opens the same kind of question for us. Well, what do we do when somebody says, I'm running JSON? Do we give them a JSON version of those paths, or do we just give them those paths and say, good luck?
You'd just basically be adding a pound, but I don't think there's any kind of way of doing the Boolean in there, right? The selection. I mean, you can just do a path, but you can't say, if I end up with a whole set of these paths, I want this whole set of these that match this path. Then which of those do I want, and how do I specify that if it's not just a part of the path? It's a I don't know.
Oh,
particular name.
Yeah, I mean, so we get back into tools, right? Because there's JSON path, who's done by Gosner,
right?
And it's got a high level of equivalence with XPath, but I don't know how broadly it's supported. I mean, you start with basically what people would call dot notation, but then you've got, all the other stuff.
Yeah, there's a path. I mean, they use that path to reference other files and particular elements in those files in the in the JSON schema. So the JSON path, I don't know if that's is used heavily in the schema. So that I know it, that's one place it's used. So the schema processor has to be able to process that, because it goes and looks for a file in that location and then uses the hash sign to mean the top of that file, and then it uses a path within the file to go down the hierarchy. So
right, it just, you know, it's the kind of the same thing we had with JSON-LD, right? If somebody says they support JSON-LD, what parts do they support? Every tool out there I know will do like dot notation and the array operator and those kinds of things. But you get into, you know, trying to be equivalent to text path and things you were talking about, and things get more interesting,
yeah,
and less supported. I think I haven't done that much JSON coding in that many environments, but I've certainly done some.
So I don't think that the full XPath with all the Booleans and all the functions would ever be supported by anything in JSON. I mean, these are simple equals, but, you know, any other Boolean expression using the Boolean functions that are available in XPath would not be translated over to JSON. So that's a real danger. I think this particular path we could. It's just competency ID equals competency 1. Yeah, I don't know how you did. Anyway, let's go on to the next one, because I don't think we're going to solve that here. Namespaces. For us, namespaces aren't a big deal, because we two things. We don't have any top-level elements, and we don't and we leave things unqualified. So
yeah,
that means the only namespace that we have, the only namespace prefix that we use in the whole file, is at the top level. So, for example, this example from academic ePortfolio, ePort colon, academic ePortfolio, that's the last time you see a colon. There's no other namespaces in here, not a single namespace in this instance document.
Yeah, so generally we rock a single namespace. There are a couple of caveats here that I think we need to think through. One thing is we allow for extensions that come from external namespaces. So, you know, somebody who's working, you know, outside the standard basically can add an additional namespace. The other thing is with the experience already doing, you know, the translation with the Gosner notation, is they just have a way to, it doesn't talk about namespaces if you read the articles by Gosner, but it does talk about attributes, and namespaces are, you know, declared as attributes. And so, I mean, what winds up happening is if you just use the default namespace mechanism throughout in your XML, and you've got a namespace declaration at the top of your document, and then if you continue to do that, even where you have our extension points, if you come along and say, let's just go with John's namespace, right? And because we have a whole chunk, right? It's not like a mix and match thing. It's like everything below this level on the tree is now in this other namespace. So then you can just declare that other namespace once, and everything below it, you know, gets it with the Gosner scheme. Because it just follows the attribute conversion rules. So if you're just using the default namespace mechanism, it converts quite cleanly. But then we're back to what do we do in general with attributes? You know, we can say don't build XML with attributes, but we can't say don't have a namespace declaration in your XML. That's not going to fly.
No, I think you can make that distinction, because you're going to have attributes in cases where you have your versions and you have your schema locations and all that stuff are attributes, right? You're not going to get rid of those. It's user-defined attributes, not those attributes.
Right,
that are
right.
Part
it's our level of standard defining attributes. We're not going
right
to add attributes. But these things like a namespace declaration, what happens in the JSON world?
you know, just carrying it both ways, right? Having a way to say, oh no, this is where we put the namespaces, and this, you know, and I would say either drop the prefixes or don't define them in the first place. They aren't defined in the, this is one of the things, right? With XML being, I can use a prefix or I can't for the exact same data. That gets a little bit tricky, right? Because I could say XML NS SIF is blah, 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 North America 3-4, right? Or I could just say, oh, the default namespace is blah, 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 North American 3-4. And so, you know, then every element in the data actually looks different. And what I would like to see is if we can say, hey, just use, when you're building your XML, just use the default namespace mechanism and don't qualify, you know, your elements and attributes, even if you're mixing namespaces, you know, because that does happen sometimes, then I would be very happy because we wind up with a really clean translation, right? Something down a path that says first name, you know, either in the XML or the JSON is, you know, something down the same path, whether it be dots or slashes, that says first name. It's not, you know, not every step of the way is prefixed with SIF or A4L or PESC or whatever it might be. And, you know, your XML and JSON will wind up looking very similar, and even, you know, even your XML and your XML will wind up looking similar instead of different. And I don't think we'd be creating a lot of work for folks because, by and large, that's what happens anyway. Every now and then I'll see a message where everything's prefixed with SIF or SIF2 or SIF3 or what have you. But it serves no purpose unless their tools really won't work with the default schema mechanism. None of the ones I've coded with are that way. Sometimes, however, you know, people find how to do the namespace qualifier, and that default mechanism is kind of a special case. So they just don't read far enough in their documentation on their XML library or framework to do that right. But that doesn't mean it isn't a 5-minute fix to go and do it correctly. If anybody's run into a tool that won't do the default namespace, let us know, because I've certainly never run across it.
Well, I'm confused on something. I could be wrong on this, but just from working with Neem, that they, with Neem, because they declare elements at the top level, all their elements are declared at the top level and not within a type. We define, usually in our schemas, we define one element at the top level, right? And that's the one that has the namespace definition on it. They declare all their elements at the top level and reference them using a ref. And that force, I don't think the schema will validate without all those namespaces. I don't think you can have a default. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong on that.
Well, you can always have one default, right? It's just whatever's not prefixed gets the default namespace. And everything that's prefixed gets its namespace.
Right, exactly, yeah.
You can always use a default. The problem comes is when you've got a bunch of XML namespaces and now you want to, you know, show this thing in JSON, now you got a problem.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you could have first name in two of those namespaces. JSON doesn't have the concept of that, I guess, unless you're using JSON LD or some
LD,
other.
Right. And that is one of the
mechanisms.
Yep. Yeah, there's a fairly simple translation to JSON LD with namespaces. It flows very quickly and, in fact, nicely, because the prefix is used to stand for a URL.
Like an XML then.
Yep. So it works. That works nicely for translation. So JSON LD, that's one place where JSON LD would be very handy, is namespaces. Now, and if but I don't know. Are you saying you have you do have some instance documents that are have a lot of name different namespaces?
No, no. We've got a few vendors that'll take advantage of what we call extension points.
Just the extension.
Any in our schemas, right? And so they'll come along and say, oh, I don't know, this is a made-up example, right? PowerSchool is moving these, you know, 10 extra elements, and they've defined how that works with their product, and perhaps they're sharing it, you know, on their website with other vendors in case they want to take advantage of these wondrous 10 additional elements. Then they'll namespace that under a PowerSchool namespace, publish a separate schema, whatever they're going to do. And, but, you know, the way we do that is it's everything under from that point down, you know, that's your any opportunity is going to fall under that PowerSchool namespace. So you can use the default mechanism at the top and say, hey, this is SIF. And then when you get down to the PowerSchool part, you can say, hey, this is PowerSchool. And you can actually, you just change the default at that point. It's just another XMLNS attribute. And then everything from there on down is under that namespace. And so if you convert namespaces across in the JSON consistently, and you always been you say, hey, always use the default mechanism, for us that would be sweet. Because the XML and the JSON names look the same. We're not prefixing anything. Everything uses the default mechanism. It converts real nice and clean. And it wouldn't cause us a problem because we do the – and everything down from here, you know, fits really well with what we've defined and how we do it. We have a very, very simple namespacing scheme. And that really has been driven you know, we've looked at doing more complicated things, but how you do that with the XML schema and the support for that in the tools is very, very touchy. So we've just wound up, you know, going with this simple scheme. And the way to make that even simpler is to say, hey, use the default mechanism at the top. If you need to change it, use the default mechanism on that element. And then, of course, everything below it inherits it. And, yep. You know, there's nothing you can't do that way. It's just you could wind up with a lot of URLs if you got somebody who's mixing and matching four different schemas or four different namespaces is really the thing to say.
Right.
Which we don't do.
So I'm going to ask, Steve's been doing this longer than I have. So, Steve, you may know, has anybody used the user-defined extension? I think it's user-defined extension. We have that type declared. It's just an any. You can put anything in there you want. Has anybody ever said that they want to validate that with their own schema? And how would they do that?
It was built into the Title IV loans specification, student loans, back when the banks were involved with the systems. The Common Record Common Line standard, what it was called, and there was a way to put whatever you wanted in that user-defined extension and could have a schema to validate what was in that extension, but Common Record Common Line was never implemented, and banks are out of the student loan business, so technically, I don't know of anyone that's using it.
The schema. We have this user-defined extension, and it's in many different complex types throughout our schemas. So, I mean, somebody could use it, but they also could just, it says any, so they could put anything they want there, and it would pass the schema.
Right.
Well, any takes different kind of qualifiers itself, right? So, you know, just by saying any, it's what kind of any. But, that's the idea, Michael, but usually it falls under a different namespace, at least. And so, like I say, where we have those extension points, the guidance I've been giving people who ask for unofficial guidance, you know, what's best practice? I go, use the default namespace. That covers the whole document. And then where you want to do that extension, use the default namespace again, and everything below that is your stuff.
So how do they Okay, so that, yeah, they use the other names, but then they have to use also multiple schemas because that schema is not referenced in the other schemas, right? So it.
Well, I mean, I believe we've changed our rules to being lax on that, so you can do it without even having a schema. But if you have a schema, it has to validate. I think that's the rules we're currently operating under.
Okay. Yeah. So it's a minor, namespaces is a minor issue from your point of view, right? And from us too. Is it something that we should put a complicated mechanism in place to resolve, or do we just let our top level element carry a colon and a prefix and leave it at that? Is that too simplistic?
Well, and that's what I'm getting at, is I'd like to avoid prefixes altogether.
Yeah. Yeah, just get rid of the prefix and get rid of the namespace, because if you don't have any terms that need to be disambiguated, is that a word? What's the word there? Somebody help me. To make something less ambiguous, I should say. Then, unless you have that coming from two different sources, then it shouldn't be a problem, right?
Well, I mean, we do have folks that use the extension points, right?
Yeah.
So we like that using the default namespace declaration. That also ties it back to which schema to use to validate the structure. But then as long as you only use that mechanism, then you don't have to worry about prefixes and differences in naming between the XML and JSON. That's what I'm trying to get at.
Oh, okay. Yeah, maybe there's something I don't understand here, but yeah, I would probably need to look into that a little further. So, do you have any examples of that, John, of an instance document that has the user defined extensions that we can take a look at?
No, I could create one, I suppose.
I don't want you to go to that trouble. My understanding. So, okay. Well, yeah.
It's just XML and S, right?
Yep.
At the top of our XML, we've got XML and S equals http://www.civassociation.org /data/model/North America/3.4. If we got to an extension point and somebody put in, you know, PowerSchool data as the tag, it would have XMLNS equals http://powerschool.com/custom/data/model/North America/.
I got it.
You know.
Yeah.
And then everything below that would fall under that set.
And it could even have a schema location to validate that section of the. Okay, I got it. That makes sense. Yep. So, yeah, how would you do that in JSON? You'd still just add something that would be we're not doing a validation, right? The validation would be done through JSON schema. So you really don't need the namespace, do you?
Well, I mean, We have a service in our infrastructure that'll tie a namespace to a schema document. So I can see us adding one for the JSON schema document. So, you know, if we've got a real nice simple mechanism that maintains namespaces, I can see value there.
Okay.
It's one of those places where, you know, maybe I'm trying to look at JSON-LB, but there's a lot there, right?
Yeah, I'm not comfortable with it yet either. Thank you, but. So, just put some kind of, what would you call that? You wouldn't call it a namespace, you'd call it a.
Well, I would say that we endeavor to use a single namespace and always use the default namespace mechanism for namespacing our documents. And then where that goes on the JSON side, right, is a question. If it goes at all,
yeah.
I think it should, but that's just my opinion.
Right, but it also gets back to, yeah, and it's something that a programmer could ignore, right? He doesn't care. If he's reading
yes,
the document,
JSON,
unless he's doing validation.
Right, right. Well, I mean, if we keep our JSON scheme simple, excuse me, our namespace scheme simple, then somebody who's just consuming the APIs, right, doesn't have to actually worry about creating the right payloads, just take them in, throw them through a parser, throw a path at them, get the few bits of data that it wants out of it, and move on with life. Yeah, as long as we keep it simple, they're not going to have to worry about it. We start going, well, we've got this and this prefix, and this doesn't convert consistently. All of a sudden, they are going to have to worry about it, right?
Right, yeah, I hit APIs all the time, and there's a whole bunch of data I don't use. Don't even reference it. It doesn't bother me. It's there, right? I understand. Yep. That makes sense. So we do use prefixes, and so that would be a possibility to – we could remove prefixes and use – just use the URL, or in our case,
sure,
URL.
Use the default mechanism.
Yeah.
So that when you've got first name in XML, you've got first name in JSON. And when you've got first name in JSON, you don't have sif colon first name in XML.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing that makes people start scratching their heads.
Right. Good point. Anybody else want to chime in on this discussion? It's been John and I, so I'd have to look at it, what that would do to our instant documents if we made that just use default. Didn't bother putting a prefix on anything.
I'm not sure. I've been quiet, not because I'm shy or anything, but because I don't have I'm trying to pull together what the exception cases are and what I think about it. I think it seems to me by my gut instinct without, and I have nothing to back this up, so that's why I haven't said anything. My gut instinct is that there's something that, it's dangerous to not have the prefixes. I think we need to call that out explicitly, and there are times when it will be extremely useful to call it out explicitly, and I'm not sure, but I don't have a good example, and I can't articulate it, so that's why I haven't said anything. I have to think about this some more. I'm not really, so that's why I've been quiet.
Yeah, I think we all have to take a look at some examples, some instance documents, and see what the implications were. For most of our stuff, we only have one prefix, and that certainly could be used the default namespace, so it's not a big deal. But it's always possible that, and that's because we combine all our schemas together with a top-level schema using our libraries, and so we never have to reference anything other than the top level schema as a validator of the whole thing, because that's where it just resolves all the namespaces to those other schemas, whereas our instance document is validated by that top level schema, and there's no need to know where each of those definitions came from when it validates. That's something the tool does, and so we don't have to worry about it. So, it's not going to make a huge difference for us. And I think the one use case that we need to resolve is if somebody else wants to do, or somebody wants to do a local validation, let's say they want to use JSON schema, and they've got this section which is user defined, right? How do they do that? I think that's the point John brought up. But you're right, we could get rid of namespaces, of prefixes altogether if we wanted to do that. So let's put that on the parking lot because I don't think we will decide that today.
Okay, so I mean, I don't know what you're. I mean, as long as we use one namespace, then it's fairly convertible.
Yeah.
Like I say, we have to have a mechanism for people to come along and say, you know, here's our extension, here's our other thing. I mean, whether something is.
But the purpose of that would be to validate it, right, in some way. To make sure that this is really.
No, I mean, it's just as much to make sure that it's understood, that it doesn't conflict with other similar elements, you know, because somebody may put in, you know, / first name as their XPath. It's going to find all the first names. If it's finding SIF first names and PowerSchool first names, maybe they have, you know, different formats, or you're going to have repeats because you got both things popping up. There's lots of good reasons to namespace, even as much as namespaces drive me crazy. There's lots of good reasons to actually namespace your data. You know, if somebody wants to ignore them after they get them and they're properly namespaced, I'm fine with that, right? They can be a real pain when you're trying to consume data. On the other hand, you know, I think the senders need to send data that's properly namespaced so that the receiver has the option to go, no, I just want the SIF first names.
So, yeah, I'm trying to think of the use cases that, but, so it's just knowing where, but again, that gets back to me, it gets back to validation. Maybe I'm, you know, that user-defined extension, you would also define as part of that, not just namespace, but also what schema it was that validated it. And that's true of both JSON and XML. But I don't know how you do that in JSON, actually, how you can take just a section and validate it with a different.
Right. Well, I mean, one thing namespaces do is it makes it clear what we need to validate against, right? But that's only one thing that they do.
Right.
They avoid naming collisions and, I mean, C++ has namespace declarations, right? So that you can have different libraries that have the same names where things don't collide. And it's something I was taught in college. Maybe it was a Microsoft extension, right? Namespaces aren't just used in XML. They're a programming concept. They're not just used for validation. They're used to, in generally, you know, say, this thing is, even though these two things look alike, they actually have different definitions.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, because I think in a JSON schema, it could, some of those rules are, can be pretty global. So, okay, so what's our proposal here? What are we saying? That we come up with a mechanism for namespace?
I think we want to say our goal is to have a simple namespace scheme, and we need to, you know, better understand JSON-LD or something like that as to how that should be represented on the JSON side of the wire.
Yeah, and how that namespace, yeah.
Because, I mean, you can agree with those statements, right?
Michael, yes, I can agree with that, yeah.
We're swimming in the same direction. It's just how specific we're going to get when.
Yeah, and maybe I'm too steeped in, I mean, all my effort at PESC has been, you know, working with schemas. And so I'm always thinking about validation. And so I'm probably, and I don't worry about instance documents too much because I don't create them. I don't even parse them. I just worry about how they validate. And I'm probably missing some parts of the use of namespace besides just making sure we got the right validation going on. So I can agree with this statement. Our goal is to have a simple namespace scheme. So we'll, and one thing we can look at is look at JSON-LG on how that could be used to effectively implement that. Okay. Any other comments on namespaces? I mean, the simple, what we did initially was we just took the prefix, which when we did our XSLT, we just took the prefix and just carried it over to JSON, which since JSON allows any characters, including a colon, in their names, didn't create any problems, but it also didn't tell you anything. It didn't tell you what that prefix meant or anything like that. So we have to have a scheme that would actually support something that was meaningful.
Or at least have the equivalent of an include statement or something like that, right, that would just, like, identify that prefix in the instance document.
Yeah, something that identifies the prefix, yes, which we don't do now. We just... I think that's true of Gessner too, right? That notation is they just, if there's a prefix there, they just send it over to JSON.
Yeah, I've never tried it with prefixes. I do know as I look at JSON examples, I tend not to find prefixes.
Yeah.
I don't think the JSON people are going to want to see prefixes. That doesn't mean we can't use them in our XML, right? They're easy
right.
to drop if we have a simple namespace scheme. But I prefer my XML without the prefixes when we're looking at SIF XML because it's all under one namespace anyway, usually, unless
right.
we've got something that's user-defined. And so, yeah, I mean, we don't have to say, no, you can't use a prefix, but we do need to settle towards, you know, our standard documents have a single prefix or a single namespace. It should be the goal in my mind, you know, and how it's declared and how it's conveyed is the tougher part. But in the end, I'm hoping I'm going to see JSON without a bunch of prefixes. Maybe if
okay.
we
so,
wander down the JSON-LD route more, we won't. Maybe we'll have a bunch of prefixes. I don't know. I couldn't get that deep with JSON-LD.
But that depends upon the marketplace. And if people really accept whole hog JSON-LD, then people will be using prefixes, right? Because they won't be using
yeah.
for namespaces necessarily, but they'll be using them as a way of linking and simplifying the linking. So,
I don't see any way around it because the other alternative is to have a full blown URL in front of each thing, which is terrible, right? From a visual standpoint.
If you've got one and use the default mechanism, you see that URL once, which is actually less extra text than if you use the prefix.
But here's the thing: it's never a problem if you only have one, right? It only becomes an issue if you have two, and that's the case we're talking about, right? Because the minute you have one, you don't even need a namespace. It's just the instance document, and it's for this purpose, and the elements are defined for the, you know, that particular use case. It's only when you have more than one that it becomes an issue, right?
Well, I think validation falls on its face if you don't qualify stuff, but
yeah, I get that.
Yeah. So I mean, yeah, it's kind of like, why are we including a namespace, right? Michael's going, well, you know, we do it for validation. And I'm going, oh, well, it's not if we've got two of them, right? Then we're actually dividing out this data follows these rules and this data follows some other rules.
Yep. So I don't think JSON has that kind of hierarchy, though, where you can declare something at one level and it carries on down to the other levels. But I guess.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Leaving
I mean,
the meeting.
Gosner, right?
And Gosner, we just convert the attribute over, and then you've got it, right?
Right, exactly.
And then you process your JSON like your XML.
I need to drop off for a 2 o'clock meeting, so I apologize.
Oh, are we done? Oh, boy, we're out of time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
well,
we're out of time.
We didn't make very good progress. We did 2 of them, but I think there's some simpler ones on the list. But, yeah, I think that I'm just to, before we sign off, just to make sure, John, you agree with this, that no prefix would be preferable unless we go to JSON LB.
I think so. I think that's what I'm saying. But, you know, yeah. Alex might have some valid points too, right? I think ultimately, unless we go to JSON LB, we don't want prefixes in our JSON. I think
in
it's
our JSON,
much more flexible on the XML.
Yeah, no, we're not going to get rid of prefixes in our XML because it doesn't really matter. I mean, I don't know how much we're going to be going from JSON to XML anyway.
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay, I'll put that in the minutes and we'll get, we made some progress, but it was a good discussion and I hope we made some progress because if we take this long on each of them, we're not going to get very far. But thank you everybody and, Jen, you can turn off the recording and everybody will love to hear us.
Thanks everyone.
Okay. All righty.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Leaving the meeting.
Bye-bye.
Leaving the meeting.
Jeff.
Leaving the meeting.
John Lovell.
Leaving the meeting. Leaving the meeting.
Jennifer Kim.
Leaving the meeting.
Steve Marvin.